Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment. It is my honor to always stop right here and welcome our guests, because I know personally that they're coming with several things I deem very expensive. That is their time. It is one of the most precious commodities offered to mankind. Time, 24 hours, each and every one of us have it. How we respect and honor time will tell me much about you. If you have learned to love her, honor her, she will reward you. But if you don't, we will know who you are. The other is the journey. The journey has power. It created the individual before us. And because of that, we are honored to have them come and share both of these precious commodities. And so we want to take the time and honor Beth for coming here at Threads of Enlightenment to escort us to the next level of our human spirit development. Beth, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story here at Threads of Enlightenment.
Oh, and Ken, thanks so much for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here for a deep discussion, hopefully.
Hopefully. Tell people how you serve, because I ask that question all the time in the onset of the podcast, because I want people to be aware that this thing is bigger than you and I. You and I are here, but we play a part in a bigger scheme, if you will, a bigger play. And so that play is when we become a servant. So how do you serve mankind in your present state right now?
Well, I think for a lot of people who do work similar to what I do, which is the field of movement, it's easy to just leave it as, I'm a Pilates teacher. But what I've realized over the many years, I've been teaching Pilates for 20 years now, is it goes a lot deeper than that, and it can. A lot of people get into Pilates for a good workout, and then as they continue moving, they realize there's a shift, there's something that has been changing. And from the perspective of people who have worked with me, it's a space and time for them to explore what is truly most valuable. And is it working with something that's more challenging, kind of getting that energy out? Is it something that's more soothing and nourishing for their body? Is it the permission to take time away from our workout, our Pilates practice, and really explore the beauty of life beyond just another workout? And that is the more holistic perspective that I bring. And for each person, I really try to meet them where they are in their journey. So if people are looking for that good workout, well, that's an option. And what I also offer is, as they get to moving their body more, tuning into what is going to be most valuable for them. And that's not always going to be exactly how I am teaching a class. So I teach with a lot of options. And that's something that we're just starting to see maybe thread in more to movement rather than do exercise exactly like the teacher, follow along and you'll be good to go. What a lot of people know from their personal experiences, that doesn't always feel good. And for so many people for so many years, it's been a barrier to really feeling good in their body and being proud of themselves for showing up. And so some people I work with, they're already there and ready to really explore all of these other areas. And for other people, it just is going to take a little bit longer. And for me, it took a really long time to detach from, you know, we must do movement in a certain way. And it's really getting into what is the essence of the movement? What is it trying to tell us? That our body is wanting a little bit more attention or understanding in a certain area. And sometimes that means scaling back from the more intense work so that we can focus on the essence of movement and what is most valuable for us.
Yeah, I'm very interested in the movement aspect and how, because yoga is a part like that. Some people get into yoga and they just do, like you said, this, they're looking at the movement, the stretching and whatever. But the history, if you will, of yoga is much more intense. It's on a spiritual, it's based on spiritual principles and so forth. So I'm very excited about this. One of the things that we do here as our custom, Beth, is to go back into that time machine that we call memory and revisit some of those spaces, as I mentioned to you on the onset, that we visit from time to time. The very first space that we do spend some time is that we call the family. here is a group of individuals, mom and dad, are traumatized in whatever way they are, and they are perceiving the world through their trauma, and they are now going to they're going to deposit data into you and began to walk you through and welcome you in life. What was your family unit like?
They were very loving and supportive, even though from the onset, I was a very intense child. I was not easy. Like the moment I came into this world, I came out screaming and I needed people around me. My parents' story of when I was in my crib is, you know, I'd lay in my crib, be perfectly content. They'd kind of sit on the floor next to me and they'd try to crawl out of the room and then peek up to see if they were still there or not. So the first 2 years of my life in particular were, I was very needy as a child. And as I continued to grow and develop, often I felt misunderstood, that I just worked in a slightly different way and people didn't quite get me. And pretty much even all through high school, people would say, like my mentors, she's pretty intense, isn't she? And I didn't quite know what to do with that intensity. And sometimes people who aren't quite as it, like say, have that passion is another way to say it, we don't necessarily know how to channel it. And I definitely didn't know how to channel it in my youth. It took a very long time to understand that and let that unfold. And that really shaped kind of a defensive mechanism in me where you weren't going to hurt me because I was going to just be this strong, capable person. And I realized much later in life that that really wasn't serving me. It also set me up to be more of what I termed at the time as a realist, which was really a pessimist. And what I realized over, you know, many years, once I was in adulthood, that we can be a pessimist or a realist, or we can be positive, and we're simply highlighting this narrative in our life. And what did I want to highlight? Because we are going to be right sometimes when we're a pessimist, and we're going to be right many times when we're more positive. It's just a prediction. What we feel is a prediction of what's going to happen in the future. And what I wanted to highlight and focus on was the positive element eventually. And that just does wonders for our body rather than focusing on that more, what I termed at the time, the realist perspective.
Yeah, I always, the reason why I take people back, Beth, is to identify what we, for lack of a better word, we call the trauma. That trauma is that decision that that young person makes based on some outside data. And in your case where you said that you are, you know, you're not going to be a certain way and so forth. And that decision, I tell people, that internal decision governs our lives for a long time until we, it puts us in a survival mode, if you will. And we are able to survive until we can't survive anymore. And we have to deal with that trauma that has been walking with us for a little while. So here's this girl. She's moving through her life and she noticed a few things that people can't, quote unquote, deal with her because of her intensity. And as you were there and recognizing that, well, you know, I'm a little intense according to them, but to you, that's just who you are. As you are dealing and moving in that fashion, how was your relationship with your mom and dad? And how was your relationship with those outside of mom and dad, family? How did you communicate to them? Because again, you are intense and that's what they're saying. What was that communication language? You said earlier that you didn't understand it, but you were still communicating. How was that exchange with those two groups?
I think that what my mom has told me anyways, and I'm very blessed for this, is she realized if she just let me be and didn't try to really, for lack of a better word, like really control me and tell me this is the way that you should do it, that the more she let me be, the happier I was. And it wasn't that I was going down a path that she was concerned about. It was just sometimes a little bit different than other children at the time. And same with my dad, is just really celebrating who I was, even though that intensity sometimes came out like very loud. My dad was 100% Romanian, so I'm 50% Romanian. And, you know, that side of my family is on the louder side. And so my expressions kind of draw from that and also my own personality. So I think that wonderful support system I had, of course, there were times where I didn't feel supported. But looking back, which is just always a different perspective when we're an adult, especially now that I have children, looking back, mm-hmm. I can appreciate how I was. And also, you know, what we know now as best practices for parenting skills, we definitely didn't have when I was growing up. And so I'm just so fortunate that my parents led towards being supportive of different avenues. I chose like creative avenues. At one point I was like, I want to, in middle school, I'm going to go to this activity where I'm going to be a mime, like learn how to be miming. My kids just found out and they said, what? You tried being a mime? It's like, well, you know, yeah. And so like trying basketball and softball, like I was more into the artistic side of experimentation when I was young.
And in relations to others, having your classmates, if you will, your posse, your gang, what was your relationship with those outside of family? How did you communicate with them, if you will, being a Hungarian and all of the different stuff?
Something that a distinct memory that I have from elementary school is, as much as I had this intense personality, it was also like, can't we just get along? And maybe it was because so often I knew I was misunderstood, that I had a group of friends, and as happens really commonly in elementary school, there became a divide. And I tried to be a peacemaker between the two sides, which did not work out very well. I'll just be transparent with that. And from that, I think that's where I started putting up my guard a little bit, because what inevitably happened is neither side wanted to work with me or, you know, be my friend at that point, because they felt like I wanted to be friends with the other person as well, which I did, because I saw that this was very temporary. People get in arguments all the time, and I just didn't simply want to be on one side or the other. And even to this day, many times I can see both sides, for lack of a better word, kind of see that gray area where, why are we just so strong in the one, you know, camp? Can't we have a conversation and work things through a little bit more? But that set me up for, in, you know, junior high and even in middle school, that lasted through early adulthood, of being a little bit more closed off, having more of a protective hard shell. And it's something that sometimes I can see now in people. I talk to my kids about this. Sometimes when people have that hard shell, many times it's because they are protecting something on the inside of them, and they don't want to express that vulnerability that we all have, because it doesn't feel good to get hurt.
Yeah. Well, you're familiar with that energy, if you will, and how someone protects themselves. So when you see it, you know exactly, because you, guess what? You were there. So this girl now, she's growing, and I see all of things putting in place. You have your shell, you have all of these different things as you're looking now into your future. And you're going into that next space that we call the educational system. Why did you pick the field that you picked? What was that conversation? What happened? Was it in school, or was it a conversation among some people that you were excited about the space that you picked when you were heading into college?
Well, heading into college, I had no idea what I wanted to be. I took a class in floral design, of all things, and was like, yes, I'm going to be a floral designer. I'm going to open up my own floral business. And about a year in, I was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, in which that type of cancer, I needed inpatient treatment. So I had to drop out of college for approximately a semester. I was in remission and was able to go back the next semester. And for about 2 years, I had additional ongoing therapy that I could do outside of the hospital. But during the most challenging points in the hospital, and really it was the first round of chemotherapy, when honestly, I was facing, I don't want to do this anymore. This is too hard. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I have no energy. I can't even get out of bed to take a shower like they're wanting me to. I'm fainting as I'm standing up. It's just emotionally challenging as well, having people come to see me who I hadn't seen in years. You know, they want to be support, but I'm just not feeling great because my head is throbbing and responding to all of the medication I was on. And I made a commitment. If I see myself through this, I never want to feel like this again. Have low energy. And that was my motivation to get back to moving my body, to working out. And it wasn't Pilates at the time. It was, you know, more traditional fitness. Mm-hmm. And when I went back to working out for the very first time, I went down to do a push-up and I just stayed down, could not push back up because I didn't quite realize I had lost so much weight that a lot of that was muscular mass. And so that weight loss wasn't positive. But what was even worse was when I was holding my nephew, who was just about a year old, I started shaking and sweating so much that I had to give him back to my sister because I did not have the physical strength nor stamina even to hold a one-year-old. And that I still circle back to that I wanted to have the physical strength and stamina for myself, for people who I loved. And about a year after that is when I got into Pilates. And Pilates just felt a little bit different, but kind of similar to working out in the gym. A lot of the exercises are unique. We do a lot laying onto our backs. And what I kind of skipped over during that time, I decided to switch from floral design to health education. So I have a degree in health education as well, because I wanted people to know that no matter what you experience, we do have some say in how we actually experience that. So, you know, I actually knew someone who was going through acute myeloid leukemia at the same time I was, had a very similar diagnosis, because there's different kind of sub strains of it, of the cancer, and that our experience was just greatly different of how we responded to it. And I decided to respond to it no matter what life is going to, what I'm going to encounter in the future. I want to be as strong as possible going into it. And not only is that in mind, but it's also in body. So that really was my reason why. And my mentor at the time in Pilates, she recommended that I pursued teacher training program because I enjoyed it. She knew I kind of grasped the concepts of it, and it was really pivotal in me shifting from then, you know, focusing on more of health education to, I would say, the application of what we're saying oftentimes in health education, which is let's find what you enjoy doing for your life and make sure it's positive for you as well. And for me, Pilates is a huge component of that.
That is awesome. I think one of the things I always encourage people that when you notice your life is in a circular motion, it means that you haven't made an internal decision yet. That internal decision means that you engage your subconscious mind and not the natural mind, because that's where we make that internal decision. That young girl made that decision, and that woman also made that decision about how she was going to feel and how she's not going to, and then she began. And I tell them, when you make that internal decision, what happens is that you engage you, and it now, because that part of you is energy, you will make this declaration as to what you're going to do. And the minute you do that, it's amazing how you began to take the steps necessary. People began to show up in your life that will be able to guide you now to that place by which you have just said you wanted to be. And it is really interesting. And I tell people, and that's for our language and term in personal development, they call that the subconscious mind. In the religious realm, they call it the soul of the man. And so when he makes that decision and bypasses our natural mind, things get done. So here you are. You began to make your internal decisions, and now they're governing your life. You are escorted into Pilates now, because I want to see how that transition happened, where you got the understanding and the insights of movement and how it treats the mindset as well. So here you are, you got into the class, Pilates, you're doing your thing. As you're doing your thing, Matt, because you have to learn all the mechanics first, when did in doing your thing begin to morph, to begin to become different, where you start recognizing some other things within the space of the Pilates?
Years and years and years. Because so often when we start Pilates or any form of movement, we really go, what I term more the mechanical nature, you know, what muscles are working, how's the body responding? And for many years it was on the physical focus. And so if my body was, you know, I was pregnant and so I had to change my Pilates practice because of that. Or if someone came after a knee replacement surgery, of course I'm going to adjust and adapt the exercises. But I didn't really consider what the whole essence of who we are needs for an incredibly long time. And it really wasn't until, I would probably say, a major pivot for me is when I lost my father to cancer. And it was a point in my life that I would never want to revisit. And yet at the same time, after going through an intense grieving process that I feel like sometimes we circle back to even long after someone's gone, they realize he also gave me a gift. And that gift was that an acknowledgement of what I'm doing, of moving my body, I want to continue to be here as fully present for my family. It was a major reminder from when I experienced cancer. And I want to keep being here, not only for the family I have now, but however my family changes and grows in the future, because I'm a strong believer that today is setting us up for that future. And so during that grieving process, I of course cried a lot. I read a lot of books that made me cry even more. My husband would say, why are you reading these books? I don't understand. But there was something there that I just needed to explore more. And so I turned to books in the beginning and my movement practice slowly started to shift with this kind of recognition. And I didn't even cognitively understand it at the time. And it I was teaching Pilates at a university, and every single semester, a few teachers would have me teach a class for them, just one class, so their students could experience Pilates as a opening into perhaps you want to try moving with Pilates a little bit more. And it was between like one semester to the next, the same teacher came back to me after I taught my class and said, something's different. I don't know what it is, but you are teaching in such a different way. And it was the teaching of the whole experience and not just a workout. So what that means is, sometimes I just try to read the energy for my personal practice, like how my energy is that day, but I try to read the room as well. So for instance, today, it is a snow day here in Colorado. And when I was at the university, snow days, when it was really snowy, had a different energetic feel from people who came to the class compared to like first of the semester, the energy is high, there's excitement there, there's some nervousness there. And that started influencing how I began teaching. And also moving. Wow. And that was a huge shift into, Pilates or other types of workouts as well don't always have to be this like very long, very challenging experience. It can be something a little bit more slow and soothing. And then once I layered back on, you know, what are the different elements of physical conditioning? What we know for our body is that our body appreciates, you know, from very vigorous to something more soothing. And there's different elements of physical conditioning that we're tuning in into and working with that more kind of like spectrum approach.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's amazing how many people are not present and present within the body. They are here, but never connected to it. And it's really interesting. And I know from chatting with a few people that how movement brings you into that space. Even in my case, it was martial arts. It brought you into that space. And you can, I was always attracted to the spiritual aspect of martial arts more so than the physical, because I saw things being done with the combination of the mind and the body that can only be explained as miracles. One particular incident was this woman, she's about 4 and change, and she did her meditation and she sat down on the floor and invited people to move her, and they couldn't move this little woman. And you know, I had seen big guys could not move this woman. And you can only do that if you tap into something other than just the body. You have to learn how to be present and bring in all kinds of energy and different things within that movement. When you began to notice it, Beth, and you said that lady mentioned it, that there is something different. When you personally began to notice it, how did that recognition, because you're practicing it, and sometimes we practice it and we do things, but we are doing it, but as you said, we don't have that full revelation yet. When you turned inwards and you began to realize that, hey, this is something, how did it affect you when that was beginning to become clearer that there is more than just physical movement?
It affected me on a few different levels. One, we can just think about from like a motivation or consistency to work out. Even though I have been in the field of movement for 20 years, I still had a relatively kind of up and down cycle sometimes with workouts, where I was like really motivated and other times I really wasn't. And so I wouldn't, or I'd say like, I just don't have the time to work out. And I realized that it was because I was holding on to it has to be the one way. And once I started making adjustments of, okay, well, maybe it's just time. I'm more limited on time now because I'm working full time and I have kiddos. So I'm going to do something for 10 minutes. Or perhaps I'm not feeling 100%. So I'm going to do something for 30 minutes that's just a little bit more soothing. That my workouts began to be more motivating and consistent, which in turn helped regulate my mood, to be quite honest. And this is something that during a phase where I wasn't working out consistently, because in the beginning, you know, we'll oscillate, they realized that I wasn't in the space to hold space for the people who I loved nearest and dearest, my family. And that was a big awakening, that moving my body consistently was helpful not only for my physical body, but in relation with other people. And now what's beautiful is what so many of us who have maybe experienced this on a personal level, whether it's with Pilates or for you, martial arts, is there's research to validate this now, that shifts are made in our cognitive function and in brain development as well. And I always say, as valuable as research is, it's always behind what so many people have already personally experienced. And so it's great that we can lean on that research and understanding, but having that personal experience is always going to be the most resonant and profound shift that someone can have.
And when you recognize, because this is really interesting, and I mentioned that to you on the onset because I'm curious about it, about recognizing trauma, dealing with trauma, and the movement of body. Because I was in yoga classes, we were in an ashram, and they did some of the yoga and the meditation, if you will, using trauma within the bodyworks to help one to relieve that stored emotion, if you will. That stored emotion is the trauma. And they were using different means. I mean, I'm very curious as to you as to when did you put it together? Because that is a powerful piece to finally go have, as they say, have that aha moment. And you're able to see the results in others as much, but first you have to see the result in yourself. How did it begin to move you through your trauma first? And then when you start applying what you had learned from your journey to others?
When I was working at the university, so this was, I had a career in Pilates for about 7 years, and then I shifted to still teaching Pilates more part-time and being an administrator on the university campus. We were having conversations that we just weren't having at the time in the field of Pilates, nor continuing education in Pilates. It was more of that movement-based experience. And as I was working with the Interpersonal Violence Office, the LGBTQ Student Resource Center, and different counseling centers on campus, I realized that these are people at the end of the day, no matter what they've experienced, and they may walk into the counseling center, they may walk into our health clinic, but they may also come into my Pilates class. And so I first got into understanding trauma from other people I was working with, offices and organizations. And it was, as I continued to understand trauma, it was always about helping them. So you asked about, you know, my experience with it first. In the beginning, it was, I want to help other people. And I think for a lot of people who start teaching movement, it's because we want to help other people. But what happened is the more I learned about trauma, the more kind of my understanding and definition grew and developed, I started making those connections, linking the dots. And I was like, oh, I have experienced that. Oh my goodness, I didn't realize that going through cancer is trauma. We didn't talk about it, you know, in the early 2000s, like we're talking about it now. Trauma, it was, I was a cancer survivor. I was in a study group where I was known as like the thriver part of the study group. Yet when I sat down waiting to, you know, get my blood pressure checked and my blood work tests and talk about how great I was doing cognitively back in school, I started crying. And I had no idea why. And years later, it was that key that unlocked the door for me, that simple understanding, oh, that was actually what we know now so often is called like a triggered response. Oh, like I was doing really well, but actually my trauma was not fully integrated. And even once I started learning and making those connections, it took many more years for, I don't want to say full many integration, because I truly believe that the trauma that we've experienced, our life experience, takes our whole lifetime to integrate and understand more deeply and just move through. However, it was super powerful for me. And I started looking at how other people were moving their bodies. And just based upon research and courses I had taken, and I started realizing how people are moving is not just based upon like their physical body, but what they have also experienced. And how can I use, for lack of a better word, what we use a lot of times is like that trauma-informed approach as I'm teaching Pilates. And I started recognizing that for a lot of people who I moved with, it became a more empowering experience than the way I taught before. It became more liberating for me as a Pilates teacher. And something that was really impactful was teaching an academic Pilates class, which interestingly enough is exactly where I started Pilates, as in an academic class. And one participant, she kept having an experience that I didn't quite know what was going on. Sometimes it just seemed like it wasn't really resonating with her, but I just let her keep exploring Pilates.
Trauma-informed Pilates. I love the name.
Hello again.
I love the name, by the way, Beth.
Oh, thank you.
I love the name trauma-informed, that terminology, care. It's really insightful, I think, that terminology that you guys use within that space.
Yeah.
So yes, you were talking about that young lady that wasn't resonating within her before it happened. How did you, when you noticed that and you saw that she wasn't resonating within that, what did you notice about her that was had caused her to be in that state? What did you notice as someone that had all of that knowledge, the background, been in that space for so long? What was it that you identified when you looked at her as she was standing there in that space?
Beautiful question. In the past, I would have thought she just doesn't care. She's just here because she's told she needs to be here. You know, she's thinking about other things. But with my new information back at, you know, many, many years ago about trauma, I had an inkling that she was actually experiencing disassociation, which happens a lot when people move their bodies and are asked to connect at a deeper level, especially if they've experienced disassociation prior, which is quite common with childhood trauma. And it was a matter of in a group setting, because it was a group class, it wasn't a one-on-one, how to continue to just gently guide the class, let her explore in a way that felt beneficial for her. And at the very end of the semester, so this was after a few months, she came up to me and said, just wanted to thank you so much for the session. I know sometimes probably didn't feel like I was getting the work. So she had recognition that, you know, maybe in from her past experiences, she had been told that. And she goes, I've never felt so supported. And I feel more motivated to work out. Or in the past, whenever I tried working out, it just felt like I didn't ever want to go back there because it was such an intense or negative experience for me. And it was just such a beautiful share that she told me that and felt comfortable doing that. Because still for a lot of people who teach movement, when we see other people trying to move in a different way than maybe we had taught, or it seems like they're zoning out, it's always sometimes a negative. Oh, they don't want to be here. They just don't care about movement. Rather than thinking, well, they're doing what is actually beneficial for them right now, even if it's different than I'm guiding them. They're listening to what they need at that time. And it was more in the beginning of when I was starting to implement a trauma-informed approach. And it was kind of that seal of, yes, this is what I need to continue exploring. And I continue to explore today, years later. So the teaching of how I teach continues to evolve. And that's something that in my early career, sometimes I was getting really burnt out because I felt like I was doing the same thing over and over again. And once I had a deeper understanding of this isn't just, you know, learning and exercise, it's really listening to it and understanding it, that I would say for at least the past 5 years, even longer, it's like, I don't get burnt out of teaching or moving my body because there's so much to explore. And it's not just the one way of how I taught in the beginning.
I'm very fascinated with that, Beth, because quote unquote, in the hippie circle, if you will, they do more of a free form movement. I've seen the movement and trying to deal with trauma through that type of modality, but to have it within a more structured modality is very fascinating to me. Whereas, I was more familiar with the free form thing, the hippie. I have a bunch of things they tell me I'm a hippie as well. So, but to have you with your insight within the construct of Pilates is very, to me, that's like some moment, you know, that's like awesome that you were able to synchronize both of them in that format and be able to bring someone in that space and to help them to navigate through the trauma-informed Pilates. I love that terminology. As you are beginning to see the results of the knowledge and the insights and the wisdom that you have gained within that space, Beth, invite us to one of those, because I know you've probably seen many. When you see that individual that comes into the room and they're clutched, and through, it's going to be several, of course, encounters and meetings. But when you see them make that transition from that clutched position to when they become free within themselves and express that, invite us to one of those transition, if you will, because like I said, I'm sure you have witnessed many of them. When you see that, how does that relate to you? And when you look at the individual, what do you see when you're looking into that world of ecstasy and freedom that they have just found?
It's listening to themselves more than they're listening to me or another Pilates teacher. And as you mentioned, it's Pilates is not necessarily this free form movement. But what we also know from people who have experienced trauma, sometimes the structure can be very valuable because there is a sense of, I don't want to do it the wrong way. And so we can teach fundamental movement skills, but then there becomes a point where it's, how do we move with this more from our intuition? So as an example, if the legs are straight and I'm teaching an option with the legs straight, when I see someone bend their knees instead or take a break, it's like that's listening to them rather than just pushing or powering through. You can distinctly see like that. I say it's moving with intentionality from listening to our body and our experience. And since there are so many ways to make adjustments, this just takes time. People who maybe have worked out for a long time or had movement experience, Pilates or otherwise, sometimes it's easier to make that bridge. If maybe, you know, moving with Pilates just seems really new at the beginning, it may feel like I have to do things exactly the right way. But what I try to thread in is, what is that position and offering those options? So it's, is it your arm is straight, elevated by a little cushion? Is it your hand behind your head? So right away, in a lot of different exercises and positions, we're curious about what works for them, and then just threading that in throughout the entire time. And what I've noticed is if I'm teaching a new class in particular, many times this will take a few weeks, as you mentioned, it's not just like one session, to kind of develop. Yeah. And one of the reasons why is because we take it back to when I first began Pilates or even just like a group fitness class I would go to in the gym. It's you do it this way. And sometimes there's an option or two, but there's not a lot of time to explore what's best and find those different alternatives. Yeah. And so the most beautiful thing is when I teach a class and they've gotten to a point as individuals where they know what they need. So for one person, it may be they always bring a blanket and have it next to them because they know for certain exercises, they're going to use a blanket. For other people, it's going to be a resistance band because that helps them with a different set of movements. And it's that autonomy that just takes time. And it's challenging to explain. One time someone, I was in a yoga teacher training program and I was moving and I wasn't doing the most challenging exercises or yoga poses during that class because it was quite an intensive training. So my body didn't need that at that particular day and time. And someone who was observing, who was a fellow person in teacher training, said, "You have such a lovely practice." And it wasn't because I was doing exactly what the teacher said. It was because she could see that distinction of what the teacher was teaching. I was listening to that, using that as information, and then making adjustments as needed. And that's what I see with so many other people as well, is that they're not just ignoring, like, no, I'm not going to, you know, try maybe the exercises in the order in which you're teaching, but I'm going to have some intention behind why I'm doing an alternative movement, expression, or even taking a break.
Yeah, making it their own. It's when you make it your own, if you will, you get a more profound results out of it. And like I said, I was very fascinated when I was reading your information. And all you guys that are listening to this conversation, all guys and ladies, I'm so excited to have Beth because I like what she is doing. I like her assignment that she has while she's here on this earth. I tell people that a lot of people come and have a job, but we are all called to fulfill our assignment, and her assignment is beautiful. I love it. I love the approach. I love how she came around it and so forth, and seeing the results. And so I invite you guys, I'm going to provide everything for you to get into in her space, because you need to become present. And one of the very first thing you have to learn to be present in and with is your body. And you can only do that through movements and so forth. And it is a part of how we become. I tell people that, you know, our goal when we start our journey is to become. We are constantly being expanded and to stretch beyond our means. But that's the beautiful thing, because we are that deep in order to stretch more. And so we live here on this planet. And this walk is forever, guys. Whoever tells you that there's an end to this, they're lying to you. And you need to get out and get yourself in a place that will teach you the truth. So here you are, Beth. You have now been doing this for a while. You are learning about yourself. You've walked through your trauma. You've seen people out and being escorted from theirs. What is that? And I love, very few people I ask this question, that what is that thing that you're feeling in you now? That is, you're sitting there, and I tell people we have this thing that shows up from time to time that is a little uneasy, that is trying to tell you and I that I have some more for you to do. I want you to go a little further and stretch. What is it, that thing that is sitting there, and where do you see it pulling you towards, if you will?
I've been, just yesterday, actually, I was thinking of like my wildest dreams. In my wildest dreams, I would have never imagined that I would be where I am as a Pilates teacher, right? Like,
yeah.
When I've made a lot of shifts in my life, in my career, and I shifted from teaching Pilates to teaching at the university setting, more of an official, like full-time job, which was an immense area of learning and opportunity for me. And that came to kind of a close, and I felt the call to circle back to Pilates. And I told my husband, we went out to dinner, and I said, you know, I want to start a YouTube channel. And he was like, what? You want to not do what you're doing and start a YouTube channel? And I gave myself time. It wasn't like I'm quitting today and starting.
Yeah.
I gave myself like 2 to 3 years to kind of see that out as a transition period. And that led to creating the trauma-informed Pilates approach course and the Trifecta Pilates membership and app. And what I'm seeing now with my wildest dream is there is something starting to shift. I'm still be teaching Pilates for those of you who maybe are watching this because you move with me right now. But there is a transition shift that's occurring, and I try not to push it, but just to honor it and keep exploring.
Allow it.
I truly believe in this. Where we're living right now, it's like we kind of live on fast forward sometimes, and we're in such a hurry to get to where we think we want to be. But from my experience, just letting that unfold and following sometimes that breadcrumb trail and being open and curious to what is my body telling me? What is my essence telling me? What am I getting signals from beyond telling me? and just giving it time. So I've never been one, my story is not one of huge transformational pivots. I mean, you may be thinking, well, you experienced cancer. That's pretty huge. It is pretty huge.
Yeah.
But what I didn't share is I actually went back into floral design. Like when I got out of the hospital, and it took me a little bit of time to make that transition, and I explored. And so what I've learned from my time so far is just giving it time and taking the time, energy, and space to tune in. So right now it's never my wildest dreams, and who knows where that's going to take me in the future.
That is awesome. I, like I said, I ask that question very rarely because I feel the pull to dig a little deeper. And again, those of you who have been listening to us, I'm going to provide everything for you to have access to her, because as I said, that we, and Beth said it, we get busy sometimes and we forget ourselves. Ourselves is the most important thing. And when you start to reconnect with yourself, you'll see how all the other stuff outside that Beth has said, you're trying to go someplace really fast that really don't need to be there. You'll see, you'll learn all kinds of wonderful things when you start to focus and allow yourself the time to let things happen, as Beth has mentioned. So we want to thank Beth for coming, because I know she's been here for a little while. And again, I always tell people the first interview I bring to people is to, so that you guys will get a chance to meet them and discover the beauty that is who they are, and give you the opportunity to go into their space and connect. And then we bring them back again, because Beth, I started bringing people back so we can get into the nitty gritty of the stuff. We want to know hands-on stuff. We want to see some of the things that you do and all this type of stuff, so that we can take them to that next level, if you will, so that they can get the deeper insight into you. And so I just want to thank you so much for coming and spending some time with us here at Threads of Enlightenment.
Oh, and I wanted to thank you for this wonderful conversation. I really hope it resonated with people, and kind of share the different part of my story as well, of what I'm doing and what my life has been like.
That is awesome. I love it. And guys, we're going to give you guys everything for her, and get in touch with Beth. Get into your body. You live there. Get familiar with it. And here is someone who's been there. She's been through her trauma, her story. And I'm sure being in the state of cancer and all that stuff, a lot of times you don't want to be present. And so, but she knows how to bring you there and to allow you and give you the experience and the wisdom, the knowledge, the insight, so that you can become who you are and begin to live that precious, precious gift of your life. And you can become, as they say, one that is doing their assignment versus one that is working at a job. Again, Beth, thank you so much.
Thank you.